Good morning, everyone. Welcome to FOSDEM. My name is Alon Mironik, and I work for Synopsys, where I manage R&D for the Seeker agents. Seeker, if you haven't heard about it, or rather haven't heard about it yet, is probably the best IS tool out there today. But as fascinating as application security is in general, and IS is in particular, it's just not my topic today, so this is the last time I'm going to mention Seeker. Instead, I want to ask, do you remember last year's FOSDEM? Well, I sure do. Last year, much like this year, I gave a talk in the community dev room. Last year, however, this meant I had to hop on a plane, fly all the way to Brussels, get up on a stage, and deliver a talk to an audience which was sitting in the same room as me. This year, as you can see, things are a bit different. In fact, a couple of weeks after I got back from FOSDEM, the airports were shut down. A couple of days later, my office was shut down. And a couple of days later, even I understood that the world is now kind of different. So I did what any good nerd would do. I hopped on Google and Googled how to be a better manager under lockdown. And unsurprisingly, there were a couple of results. What did surprise me is a lot of these results talked about how to make your work situation at home or under lockdown more like an office. So there were suggestions to have virtual coffee with your peers instead of the water cooler talks. There were suggestions to have daily or bi-daily sync meetings. One of them even went as far as saying, leave your webcam open, have the entire team leave their webcam open, and that way, since you can all see each other, you kind of have an office feel to it. To be completely honest, and I mean no disrespect to anyone who came up with these ideas, but to be completely honest, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. To me, this sounds like you'd be devoting a lot of energy in trying to change the world back to something that you know, instead of understanding the world is a bit different now and modifying your own behavior. Moreover, I think this concept or these ideas kind of implicitly or even explicitly assume that, first of all, everyone would want to go back to an office, or at least an office-like work environment. And second, that everyone actually could. Now, this assumption to me is not only wrong, I think it's deeply rooted in privilege. With this new reality, a lot of us are finding a lot of new restrictions, new disturbances, if you were, to their lives. Some people have health problems, and if not, sometimes their immediate family, their significant others, elderly parents are facing health issues and they need to care for them. For some of us, there are essential services or services that we perceive as essential that have been shut down. For some people, for instance, they need to devote more time and energy to childcare because schools and kindergartens are working in some reduced capacity or even not at all. So just the assumption that you are able to sit down and have an 8, 9, 10 hour workday is, well, privileged. If you can, fine, great, good for you. To be honest, I'm jealous. But for a lot of people, this isn't the situation. But this is not the privilege I want to talk about today. Instead, today, I want to talk about our privilege as managers. As managers, we have a unique capacity to determine, at least to some extent, the work environment of our teams. This to me means that in some small way, we have the ability to make the work environment, or even I'll go as far as saying the lives of the people in our team a little bit easier. And if we do not use this privilege, we are wasting it. Now, before I go in to discuss how we can and, in fact, should, in my eyes, do this, I have to take a minute to talk about oxygen masks. And I do not mean the COVID type. So I'm guessing no one here is flying anywhere anytime soon, but for those of you who do remember, in the pre-COVID times, sometimes we used to get into these metal tubes and fly across the world. Now, every time you did this, before the flight, there was a safety instruction, and they all sounded pretty much the same. In the unlikely case of an emergency, oxygen masks will be deployed from the ceiling. If you are traveling with someone who needs your assistance, fasten your oxygen mask first and only then help them. Now, this metaphor extends, of course, beyond a physical oxygen mask. This metaphor, in layman words, says that you need to take care of yourself before you try and take care of others. As humans, at least as humans who are not sociopaths, usually if we see someone in need, our instinct is to help them, especially if this is someone we know and even care for, like, for instance, our team members. What a lot of us are not always good enough in doing is making sure that we have our own oxygen mask on first. So before you start thinking about how you take care and how you help your team, you need to make sure that this is sustainable. You need to make sure you're taking the time and energy to care for yourself. And for everyone, this means something else. Some of us need some time off with our family. Some of us need some alone time to pursue our hobbies. Some of us need to make sure they catch the football game in the Champions League. This is all fine. Find out what you need, what energizes you, and make sure you stick to it. Make sure you take care of yourself. Having said that, let's jump into things. So, a lot of people talk about work-life balance. Frankly, I really hate this term. This term kind of suggests that there are two separate entities, work and life, and you need to balance them out. In today's world, even before COVID, when we are always connected, I think this term has been eroded. Post-COVID, where you are essentially at home, your home becomes your work environment, and you, for lack of a better term, invite your work to invade your home. I think it's really hard to talk about work-life balance. I think it's also wrong. These are not two separate entities. Everything is life. You don't stop living just because you're sitting in front of a computer and programming. So we shouldn't be talking about work-life balance. We should be talking about life and how we do not allow work to reduce or unjustifiably reduce our quality of life. Now, for programmers or tech workers in general, if you schematically look at it, work means one of two things. The easy part is when you sit down at your computer and write code. And I say this in the most general terms possible. Code, scripts, open bugs, move tickets around in Jira, whatever. The more interesting part, or the harder part, is the part where you need to communicate with other members of your team or other people outside of your team. And here is where we can make a difference. But before we talk about how we do this, I want you to try and consider communication in the broadest term possible. So if you have a meeting, you're obviously communicating with someone. And if you are writing a Slack message, you're obviously communicating with someone. If you're drafting an email, you're obviously communicating with someone. But that's not that. Any time where you produce some information that is being consumed by anyone else, this is communication. Have you opened a bug? Have you filed a bug? You're communicating with the developer assigned to solve it. Have you submitted a PR or MR or whatever you call it for review? You're communicating with your reviewer. And so on. So, since most of us do not work in a vacuum, we really need to be conscious that almost anything that we do, anything that someone else may look at or may consume, is communication. And if we want to communicate effectively, especially in this world, we have to take into account personal time zones, which to me is the key concept here. Now, we are all aware of geographical time zones. If it's 10 a.m. over here in Israel, where I live, it might be 8 a.m. somewhere else, and it might be 12 a.m. somewhere else, and it might be the middle of the night in the States. This is kind of obvious to all of us. What is maybe less obvious is the concept of personal time zones. So for me, for instance, I like to start my day a bit late. I like to have a lazy morning, have coffee with my wife, say hello to the cats, and only then start my day. And I usually reach my peak productivity around lunch, or what most people will call lunch, around 1 or 2. Then I'll take a break, have lunch, do the dishes, take care of a bunch of household chores because I'm kind of off because of lunch, and go back to work 2, maybe 2.5 hours later. Conversely, someone else in my team has 3 young daughters, so he starts his day at around 7, 7:30, makes sure his daughters are set up for school, whether this means dropping them off or setting them up with the laptops, tablets for the remote school solution they have right now, and starts his work day at about 8. Other people may start their day much later. Another person in my team starts his day by going out to surf when the beaches are open and gets on to start working at about 12 o'clock after he's had his surf in, got back home, had a second breakfast, showered, etc. And we all live about 30 or 40 minutes away from each other. We're all in the same geographical time zone, but our personal time zones are really different. We have really different schedules for our days because our lives are different. Again, and this just becomes much more accentuated under COVID and working from home restrictions. Now, if we want to communicate effectively in this situation, and as I said, almost everything we do is ultimately communication, the best thing we can do is default to async communication. This may surprise some people, and it's not surprising that this does surprise people, because we don't grow up with async communication, at least people in my generation don't. We grow up talking to our parents, to our schoolmates. We finish school, we may or may not go to college, and then we go get a job. And most of our interactions in most of these jobs are in the same office, talking to our peers, talking to our managers, talking to customers, and so on. But this is for most people not an option anymore, or at least not a good option anymore. So we have this implicit assumption or implicit understanding that synchronous face-to-face communication is more efficient? Well, maybe, but the numbers just don't support it. On average, if you want someone to understand you, people talk at about 150 to 160 words per minute. Conversely, people read at about 250 to 300 words a minute. So in theory, async communication should be twice written, at least async communication should be twice as efficient as verbal communication. Moreover, with written communication, you can pause, you can go back and reread something you don't understand, or look up a big word, or anything like that, and you'd only be taking away your own time. You won't be taking away the other person's time by saying, hey, wait, go back, say that again, which is an effect which is, of course, compounded in meetings, because if you have 10 people on a meeting and you asked the speaker to repeat something, you're now wasting 10 people's time. So why do we think that verbal or synchronous communication is more efficient? Well, we tend to think that a lot of information is lost in async or written communication. There are various studies on this, but in verbal communication, or at least in face-to-face communication, between 73 to 90% of the communication is in fact non-verbal. It's based on facial cues, even intonations in the voice, pauses, etc. All this information gets lost when you write instead of talk. So a lot of people kind of automatically assume that written communication, asynchronous communication, loses a lot of information and is therefore inefficient. I disagree with this. I don't disagree with the numbers. I don't disagree with the research. I do think the conclusion that written communication is ineffective is a crutch. It is based on the fact that people are used to and are just better at verbal communication, and they tend to write off other forms of communication as inefficient instead of putting in the energy and actually becoming better at asynchronous communication. Now, we in the open source community all know this. Open source is built on asynchronous communication of between diverse teams, or not even teams, individual contributors scattered across the world in different time zones, in different personal time zones, and in various degrees of language capabilities. So we in open source mostly know how to do this properly. What lessons should we take to our day job, to non-open source developers, to help them become better in this? So the cardinal rule of better written, better asynchronous communication is being explicit. I, of course, don't mean using explicit language which your mother will not approve of. I'm talking about saying what you mean and meaning what you say. In other words, leave no place for assumption. And again, we need to remember that any interaction we have is a form of communication. If, as a manager, I assign a bug to a developer, I am communicating with him. This is really poor communication because I don't pass on the full meaning of this action. Okay, what does assigning a bug mean? Should I drop everything and do this now? Should I put it in my schedule? Am I expected to solve this? Am I expected to assess how much time it needs to be solved and then get back to you? So instead, we always want to be explicit here. Okay, there's a big difference between assigning a bug and assigning a bug and adding a comment saying, this bug looks important to me, but it is not urgent. Please finish what you're working on now and then fit this bug into your schedule. I don't particularly care when you get to it, but it has to be done before milestone XYZ due on date ABC. Okay, so this doesn't even mean micromanaging. Okay, I've left the developer empowered to make his or her own decisions, but I did communicate very explicitly the expectation here. Don't confuse explicitness with micromanaging. The second cardinal rule of effective communication is being flexible. Most people have their preferred style of communication. Some people prefer emails, some people prefer Slacks or voice calls, which I think we've established are inefficient, but some people still prefer them, or even video calls, because we are not robots and some people need very varying degrees of socialization. Some people, it really helps to see someone else's face. Again, even though this is not necessarily the most efficient form of communication. As managers, we probably have our own preferred form of communication, which is great. But we need to remember that each and everyone on our team has their preferred form of communication. And unless there's an extremely good reason to prefer one over the other, why not be flexible? Why not make the members of your team or the other people you're communicating with a bit more comfortable? Now, you need to keep in mind that for most people, their manager is the primary source of communication they have. Their manager's the filter through which they perceive their job. Okay, manager is usually in charge of delegating tasks, giving feedback on the performance of these tasks, prioritizing tasks. And being a professional, at worst, sounding board to bounce ideas off, and at best, a professional authority where you get advice from. So, given this discrepancy in power, this discrepancy in position, why not make communication a bit easier, a bit more comfortable for everyone, be flexible and meet them where they are comfortable instead of where you are comfortable. Now, of course, this isn't a Boolean rule. I do not mean you should always do whatever's uncomfortable to you and most comfortable to anyone else. You need to find a solution that works for both or any number of parties. But as a general rule of thumb, if you're, as a manager, always completely 100% comfortable, chances are that, well, either everyone else you work with is exactly like you, prefers the exact same style of communication as you. In that case, well, your life is really easy, but you should probably think about diversifying your team. But that's a topic for a completely different talk, maybe next year. If it's not, chances are you're making some people on your team uncomfortable, or at least you have the ability to make the work of some people on your team a bit more comfortable. And if that's the case, why not do that? With that, I think I'm out of time. I will take questions after the talk. Till then, if any of this resonates to you, if you want to continue discussing this, I most certainly invite you to reach out. I'm available on email, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. I'm really not a hard person to find. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. Have a great FOSDEM.